Welcome to the Strong Girl Podcast, a podcast for and about strong women and how they overcame the things that once made them feel weak. Join me, your host, Samantha Russo, as I discuss everything from mindset to physical health with guests that will surely inspire and motivate you. There will be laughs, there will be tears, and maybe a few F-bombs, but more importantly, lessons to learn to help you grow and embrace your strong girl. All right, so I am so excited to welcome Lauren Lopez onto the Strong Girl Podcast. And I actually met Lauren when I was in high school and we were both performing at a local community theater group. And I think the first and maybe the only show we were in together was Oklahoma. And I remember being so intimidated because Lauren was and is so beautiful and really has like this old Hollywood natural beauty, like gorgeous lips, and her voice is amazing. Lauren's from Massachusetts. She's a part-time realtor working with friends and her husband, a holistic health enthusiast, yogi, blogger, and stage 4 recurrent cervical cancer survivor. And we actually only really recently reconnected through social media through her really sharing her journey and just sharing this inspiring and positive outlook and attitude. And that was something that I was really, really drawn to and attracted to. So welcome and thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be talking with you.
All right. So let's just kind of dive right in and really take me back to the beginning of all of this for you. You know, when did you suspect something wasn't right, and what did you do?
Okay, so to go back to 2012, and I had met my husband and we were dating, and I could tell that things were maybe going to get a little serious. So I bumped up my OBGYN appointment from November to May, so I could get a prescription for birth control. And it was at that appointment that I had my very first abnormal pap. And it turns out that at the time I had stage 1 cervical cancer. So I had no symptoms, nothing, no indication that anything was wrong. It was truly just caught with prevention screening. So ladies that are listening, please be vigilant about this. It is not something you want to miss. I had no symptoms. So I had 2 small surgeries called cold knife cone biopsies, and the first one, there were positive margins, so they found precancerous tissue. So they did a second one, and on the second one, all my tissue came back negative. So then I just went into routine follow-up care. I went in, you know, every 3 months, then every 6 months, and it was actually at my 2-year appointment right after I had gotten married that we found that it had come back. And once again, I had no symptoms, no missed periods, no pain or discomfort, absolutely nothing. It was truly caught just through screening. Wow. This most recent time, when it came back in 2017, it actually presented as stomach bloating. I thought I was having just some stress weight gain at first. And then I thought I was having gut issues. So I was trying everything, you know, apple cider vinegar, kombucha, mm-hmm. trying to like diagnose and heal and fix it myself. And it wasn't until it kept getting worse and worse that when a coworker came into the real estate office who happened to be a nurse, I just mentioned something to her. She took one look at it and said, "You need to go to the doctor immediately." And it was within about a week of that we found out that my stomach bloating was actually ascites from a massive tumor in my stomach, and that I had stage 4 recurrent cancer.
Wow. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was your mindset? Take me through your mindset, I guess, journey from the very beginning. You know, were you always so positive? Because I mean, over the last year or so, just your posts and the way that you talk about your cancer journey has just been so powerfully positive and optimistic, but was it always like that?
The simple answer is no, it was not always like that. Anybody that has, I think, been diagnosed with a serious illness and come out the other side can attest that it is such an emotional roller coaster. So to go way back to the beginning, when I was first diagnosed, it shook me. And when I was first diagnosed, it was cancer, but it was considered like so early that while I was certainly freaked out, I'd never had a surgery before. It wasn't life-threatening, or so they said at the time. But it shook me, and I called out of work that day and was like kind of laying in my bed just really stressed out and scared. And after a few hours, I got up and worked out because I needed an outlet, and that was something that stayed with me. Another thing is that I have never, from day one, I never played the victim, and I didn't ever ask why me. I will never forget after they gave me the news, and I just was like, okay, so what's my next step? What are we doing? What's the plan? What's the prognosis? And we went through all of that. They were like, well, don't you want to ask why you? Mm. And I just said, no. That was never a thought. I knew they had already told me there was no genetic disposition, that it's very random. They couldn't find any medical reason. So to me, to ask why me was not going to be productive.
Yeah.
And that mentality has really served me. When my cancer came back the second time was by far the hardest time in my life. I had been newly married, and I needed a hysterectomy when it came back. So, you know, newlywed, 28 years old, losing fertility and cancer is back. I was really depressed, mm-hmm. and it was really a challenging time. But I was encouraged by my mom, actually, to find something every day that I could enjoy doing, no matter how small, something to be grateful for, and something that made me laugh. Mm. And I did that every day. And it was through that discipline that it turned positive. Now, this last time when I was given the terminal diagnosis, it was honestly as though a light switch came on, and I realized that if I had limited time left on this earth, that I was going to be happy. And I made a very strong, conscious decision at my soul level, and once I did that, even on the days that were garbage and I felt horrible, I was still happy.
That's powerful. So yeah. You also, I mentioned earlier that you are a blogger, you have a blog, and in your most recent post, which I will definitely link for other people to read here, you said that being told you were going to die gave you life. That is
a
really, really powerful statement for someone with an illness, but also for people that aren't battling an illness. Can you kind of talk about that?
Sure. Being told I was going to die quieted all of the noise and the chatter in my mind on the minutiae and the day-to-day planning and all of the limiting beliefs. So for me, that meant that I finally stopped pretending I fit into all of the molds of what I thought I should be doing or focusing on. So whether that meant how I was as a wife, my career, just who I am and what I want to spend my time doing, I realized that I defined so much of if I was a good person or not based on my career success.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized quite quickly that I was not going to be able to work, and in fact was going to be disabled. So how then am I going to find my own self-worth? Someone who has always spent their time and their life believing, you know, you are what you do, but especially you are your level of career success. So it gave me life in that I realized that being happy and joyful and purposeful and living a meaningful life doesn't have anything to do with those things. It has nothing to do with your 401k. It has nothing to do with if you're a supervisor, if you're a manager, if you're wealthy, if you're a property owner. That has nothing to do with living your best life. So cancer gave me life because it gave me clarity.
I relate to that so, so much. That has been a struggle that I have been finding that I deal with all the time, is defining myself based on a career. And to hear you say that is really incredible. So can you kind of talk about some of those things that you put a focus on to make sure that you were living this happy, joyful life?
Sure. So I was given the gift of limited time. You know, they told me 6 months to 2 years. So I decided if I only had limited time left on this planet, what do I want to dedicate my time doing? And if I'm going to pass away, how do I want to be remembered? What do I want to be remembered for? So I started there, and it became quite simple for me. I wanted to spend as much time with my friends and family as I could. I wanted to travel. I wanted to eat really yummy, good food, because my stomach had been garbage for so long after these tumors. And I wanted to do yoga, because yoga is something that I practiced on and off throughout my life. And I always equate yoga with when I'm happiest and healthiest. So once I knew that, that's what I focused on. And because we started to operate, when I say we, I mean my husband and I, off of if time is limited, we reacted immediately. Mm-hmm. And there weren't those roadblocks of, oh, I'll wait and do this next year. Oh, we can do it later. When I turned 30, I went to work, and then I came home, and it just continued to work from home, and deliberately said, oh, we don't have to do anything for my 30th birthday. We can celebrate next year, as if that's a given. Right. As if I'm going to be in a position. So once we started operating out of act immediately, everything, ironically and amazingly enough, fell into place. We were in a position where I could stop working, and we had made some lifestyle choices that enabled us to not have to worry financially, which gave me the time to go, oh, I'm going to start yoga teacher training, or I want to just spend all week visiting one friend a day with the energy that I have. And as I started to focus just immediately on the things I wanted to feed my soul, the big picture stuff fell into place.
I love that. And I think that's, I mean, obviously it's very hard to do, but just that being present is so important, because you're right. You know, when you do kind of start focusing on those things that bring you the most joy, that's when, like you said, the minutia just falls into place.
Yes.
So you've mentioned your husband a few times now, and so he was there from the very beginning. And how has that relationship evolved, and really what role did he play for you?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. So I know that it was not luck or circumstance on why he came into my life 6 weeks before I was diagnosed. We speak about this quite often together, that we believe we were meant to be together and meant to experience this together. So our relationship has certainly changed and evolved from the beginning. You know, I had to tell him 6 weeks into dating somebody, hey, I might have cancer. Mm-hmm. And I remember being really afraid that he was going to break up with me. And I would not have blamed him, not in the least bit. And he didn't. It didn't scare him. Or if it did scare him, he did not let on. So we made it through, and then we were married, and then I lost my fertility. And that was really challenging because I just felt so guilty. It was hard enough for me to grieve the loss of not being able to have biological children, but I just felt like I was failing him.
Mm.
That because he chose me to be his wife, now he can't have biological children. But what it gave us was a rock solid foundation of having to cut away the annoyances of the day to day. For example, he is so tidy and so clean, and I am by nature not. So instead of focusing on those petty things, which I think we would have had we not been hit with this, we have now focused on how do we get the most out of our relationship for as long as we have each other. And now we speak truly on a deep and soulful place of what makes you really happy and how can I support you on that journey. It is so common to see people get divorced with illness like mine. I've read so many books of people that have been given terminal diagnoses that are able to make wonderful lifestyle changes, and then they make all these changes and their spouse is like, hey, whoa, I did not sign up for this.
Yeah.
And I'm so lucky that my husband has chosen to come along for the ride and has taken this soul journey with me and is every bit as open and excited about changing as I am. So he's a true partner, and I'm really, really lucky.
I love that you called it a soul journey. I think that's really special. What about some of the other people that kind of come to mind that really played a role throughout your journey?
There have been mountains, and let me start by saying that I am not someone who accepts help well or graciously, and that was one of the hardest things for me to learn, because with this last go-round, I was so sick, I needed help. And it was very humbling to accept it. But once I made that choice to accept it, I can honestly say that it has been the most extraordinarily beautiful year of my life because of the amount of love and support that I have felt from every direction. And some examples of that are just, obviously, I have phenomenal parents. My mother is great. My mother-in-law is also wonderful. So they were both living with and next door to me during my treatment. So they took on a lot of the workload. They would take me food shopping when I wasn't up to food shopping and driving. They would cook for me. So that family support was huge. Another one is my little brother. And when I say my little brother, I mean my brother-in-law. Hmm. He came into our lives in a very significant way. Amazingly enough, right after I had my hysterectomy, they needed somebody that could watch him on weekends, and I wasn't working because I was going through chemo and radiation. So he and I started hanging out, and I remember laying on my hospital bed thinking, I want to be there when he graduates high school in 6 years. I need to be alive for this. So he gave me something to focus on why I had to be here. I was also, right after I was diagnosed, I had so many people come and visit me in the hospital. It was dubbed the party room. I had flowers and cards and candy and people everywhere. And I was just so flooded by that love. And my friends have been incredible, just there for me. I had a couple of friends that would call or text me every day. And sometimes I wouldn't answer and they never got mad. But I knew they were there, and that support is incredible. I was also gifted, you know, people put me in touch with Joe Andruzzi of the Patriots to go to a game and speak with him and his wife, and they have an incredible foundation because Joe is also a cancer survivor. So people put me in touch with them, and somebody else knew that I loved Trevor Noah and that he was my something to make me laugh almost every day, and they arranged for me to meet him when he came to Boston.
That's amazing.
So just once I finally could humble myself and go, yeah, I cannot do this alone. Mm-hmm. I was flooded with 10 times more support than I would have ever imagined. And I want to just take a little pivot on that and just say that speaking to my inability to accept help is also my inability to accept a compliment. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things is people would tell me, either with my wigs or as my hair was growing back in and it was super short, I love your hair. And I was so uncomfortable and self-conscious about it that it took every fiber of my being to not be like, it's a wig, or, oh, I just had cancer and so now my hair is growing back in. Mm. But because I lived with it for so long, I eventually learned to just go, you know what, thank you. If it was a wig, I love my wig too, because I feel like I've got great hair. Or if my hair was growing back in and I thought it looked like garbage, but somebody said, I love your hair, it's like, you know what? I have hair again. Yeah. I love it too. So it taught me to just accept the help in whatever form it shows itself and take it and pull it into my heart.
Surrender.
Yeah.
So you got a tattoo. And I really loved the story behind it. I was scrolling your Instagram and I saw it. I was wondering if you could share that with us.
Sure. So I have a tattoo of a lotus flower on my wrist, and right under it, I have the words, Still I Rise, which are borrowed from Dr. Maya Angelou's And Still I Rise, which is an extraordinary poem about the trials and tribulations that face Black women, which I don't know about, but it is all about strength. And I found myself during treatment, there were some days when getting out of bed was a true challenge. And I would find myself, as I was putting my feet on the floor, just saying to myself, still I rise, and still I rise. So it became kind of my mantra. And above it, as I mentioned, is the lotus flower. And the cool thing with lotus flowers is they bloom in mud. Their roots come from dark, yucky mud. And then they bloom through to the surface and repel the mud. So I think of my cancer as kind of being that journey of I had to go through some real mud to get to this blooming, wonderful clarity place that I'm in now. And one thing I've realized is that once I'm through the trauma in the moment, it's very easy to fall into old habits that no longer serve me. So I put this big old tattoo on my wrist as a daily reminder of the mud that I've come through so that hopefully I can avoid falling back into it.
I love that. So you're into holistic health, and I'm interested in knowing some of the things or some of the treatments and things that you did that you really felt like made all the difference this time around.
Sure. So I started with getting Reiki at Beth Israel, and Reiki is an ancient form of energy healing. It's really simple. Anyone can do it. Anyone can get it. And I would get that during chemo treatments. And I did not have any side effects other than fatigue during chemo. So I never had nausea. I really didn't have any noticeable organ changes. Most people, their liver and their kidneys shut down with the level of chemo that I was getting, and my level never changed. I really think that that energy work really helped the chemo go where it needed to go in my body and not go where I didn't want it to go. And there's a lot of science behind it now and a lot of studies. I won't go into it, but I will just say for me, it worked. And it worked so much that now that I'm healthy, I'm going to be a Reiki volunteer at the hospital so that I can hopefully pay it forward.
Yay, I love that.
Yes. I also really, really, really believe that the meditation that I did on how did I get so sick? The mind and body connection. I spent so much time meditating, and I think that that meditation helped me get in a very positive mindset that allowed me to stay very joyful. So I can't recommend meditation enough. Hand in hand with that was yoga for me. Yoga helped to teach me how to meditate, and it is very gentle. You can make yoga very flashy with handstands and all of that, but at its core, it's all about just breathing and being in the moment, and you can really modify it to be incredibly gentle. So on days when I had some energy, I would go do yoga just to get some movement, and I think that that helped keep me strong and helped propel me out of bed on those days that were challenging. And nutrition also was huge, feeding my body what it could handle, what it could digest, and trying to get the right nutrients in were really important for me.
Yeah. What about, so you had to do a pretty significant surgery. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So in April, I had HIPEC surgery, which if you want to Google it, is HIPEC. And the gist of it is they completely open your stomach up. It's for anybody with metastatic cancer located solely in your stomach cavity. So they do it for ovarian cancer. They do it for, I think, like liver cancer, some lung cancer. And they open you up, and they took out a bunch of organs for me. They took out my spleen, my appendix, my gallbladder, my omentum, what was left of the one ovary that I still had. And when they finished taking out all the organs they could take out, they go through and they actually look for disease on the rest of your organs. So they scraped off, like, surface cancer off my liver, my kidneys, and all of my intestines. And when they were done all of that and they removed all visible cancer, they then heat up chemo and pump it into your stomach and shake it around, shake it in your stomach for 2 hours.
Wow.
So it is a really intense surgery. The recovery was really, really challenging, but I'm cancer free. So it, for me, was very effective.
And so it's been over a month since you found out that you were cancer-free. Can you kind of tell me what that day was like?
Oh, yeah. So I found out I was cancer-free in a somewhat anticlimactic way. In that, well, there are two parts to it. So the part of my holistic healing that I left out, and I'm glad you asked this question, is I also worked with a psychic and medium, and then also somebody who's a medical intuit during my treatment and now post-treatment in my recovery. And both of those healers had told me that I was cancer-free. Wow. And that they had very positive feelings. So I wasn't too nervous, because I could kind of feel it in my gut that I was good, and I had both of them saying, no, we really think you're going to be good. But I actually got my CT scan results myself. Beth Israel has a patient portal, and I'm pretty proficient on it after all of these years. So I just clicked on my reports, and there was my CT report a few days before my actual appointment. So I read the, you know, 10-page report, and all I was reading was no evidence of disease, no evidence of disease, nothing abnormal to report. And I just remember my body kind of almost going numb, and then just running out and telling my husband, it's official, I am cancer-free.
Wow.
And then I went that night to celebrate. I went to my regularly scheduled Wednesday night yoga class and then did an hour meditation at my yoga studio after that to celebrate.
Wow, just so casual, nonchalant.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing, right? It's like when you're really doing what makes you happy and joyful in your day-to-day life, when you get either extraordinary news or really difficult news, you continue about your day. Mm. And that's the beauty. It just felt natural to me to go to class. Mm. That's what I do. It brings me joy every day. It was extra joyful because I got to share the news with everybody, yeah. But that's all I needed to celebrate, was just to share this wonderful news with all the people in my life that have helped me.
That's awesome. So I guess what's next for you? Kind of, you know, you have the blog going, yoga, Reiki, what's happening?
Yeah, so my big thing during all of this was realizing that people are actually incredibly kind and beautiful, and I just want to spend the rest of my life paying it forward. So I will be working at Beth Israel doing Reiki. I will be a yoga teacher. I'm hoping to bring yoga into Beth Israel and or other hospitals for cancer patients and anybody else that wants it in that setting. And I'm actually hoping to also do yoga in our prison system.
Wow.
That is kind of my passion project that I don't even know where to start, but I will be doing some research. But I just believe that yoga can give anyone and everyone the skills that they need to better themselves. And I believe that's what our prison system should be for. So I feel like this is one teeny tiny iota thing that I could maybe do to maybe help people.
I love that. Putting it out into the universe right now.
Yes.
So as we kind of wrap things up, what are some, I guess, words of advice or anything else that you would like this strong girl community to know?
Sure. So specifically when it comes to your health, you have to be your own champion. You can go online, and if you Google benefits of Reiki during chemo, you'll find 10 articles on how wonderful it is and people like me who are radically in remission, and you'll find 10 articles about how people who do Reiki are going to die. And take a subject, and you can argue both sides of it, right? Mm-hmm. We live in an age of information. And that is our biggest blessing and our biggest curse. So listen to your body first and always. Your doctor is important, but they are not a dictator. You are in charge of your own health. I like to think of my doctors as my employees. So would I tolerate an employee who doesn't buy into the company vision and doesn't communicate well and doesn't listen to me? No, I would not.
I love that. Wow.
Yeah. So I make sure as I go through my medical treatment that I have a doctor that understands my goals, what I prioritize on treatment, and what is important to me in my life. So we're trained to think of doctors as dictators and authority figures, and we often will just listen to what they say and go with it. But if I've learned anything, it's that they're human and they're people, and you're not going to get along with every person that you meet. Same thing with your doctor. So make sure that you feel like you have a great, trusting relationship with your doctor. Step one. That is my biggest thing. And my other thing that I want to just share with the strong girl community is be kind to yourself and don't take life so seriously. Mm-hmm. This is meant to be fun and it's meant to be joyful. And if you can learn to laugh when you fail, then you are winning more than you know. Just have fun with it. What a gift we are to be alive and to be learning. It is a joyful, joyful thing, even when we fail.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So thank you so, so much again for doing this. I will most definitely link to your blog and to your public social media handle so people can find you, because The stuff that you put out really is so thought-provoking and so inspiring, and I have really loved, kind of watching from the social media stands, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the second episode of the Strong Girl Podcast. And I would just like to say a huge thank you to everyone that listened to the first episode and for giving such great feedback, both positive and constructive, for allowing me to just be so vulnerable. If there was something about this episode that you really connected with and really resonated with you, it would mean the world if you shared it. Share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it on your Instagram story, and tag me at Samantha L. Russo. That is the only way to let people know about this podcast and help it grow. I'm super excited. Next week, I'm going to have another interview for you on Tuesday that I think you're really going to connect with. And I also wanted to give you a kind of behind the scenes info on the interview that you just heard with Lauren. So that was actually the second interview that we did together. The first interview we did was amazing, but I made a newbie mistake, and I don't know what I did, but I only recorded myself. I didn't record Lauren, and it took everything in me to not completely lose it. It was really special, though, that I had just done my first interview with Lauren, and it gave me some perspective to kind of look back and say, okay, it's just a podcast interview. It was 30 minutes. It's no big deal. Just tell her what happened, and I'm sure she'll be fine with it. And of course, because I'm sure you understood, or you can get the type of human being that Lauren is just from her interview, she was more than okay. She was happy to do it again and completely understanding. And something that she said that really stuck with me was that this was supposed to happen. Maybe there was something that we didn't touch upon the first time that we really needed to get across. And I think we did just that with this episode. So again, thank you so much. Be on the lookout next week for another episode, and share.